This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello everyone, thanks for joining the To Hull and Back podcast sponsored by 6 Yards Out and Old Zoological. And for some reason, Ant's laughing through the intro. Did I do something wrong? I hope not.
I tried to scram one last second pizza before the video finished and it didn't quite work.
And it didn't work. It was a very unprofessional start from Ant, but I'm also joined by Will and myself, your host Nathaniel, who will try and keep the podcast together with Ant just, you know, eating on their job. That's not good. But before the episode or the last episode, we were discussing that, looking ahead to these two difficult fixtures, Coventry and Burnley, two draws would be a positive result in both of those. We got one draw against Coventry and then we lost against Burnley last night. So Will, I'll go to you first. Over the course of these two games, were you surprised at how things went, and are you relatively, you know, not too disappointed by, you know, no wins in those two games?
I'm not too disappointed at all. Coventry, I felt, was a draw. The result was a draw. Both teams had enough chances themselves to score. It probably should have been a higher scoring draw, let's be honest. But Burnley was going into it was a free hit for me. I'd have been happy getting anything out of it. And I was happy enough with the performance, and the performance was good against a team that's cruising back to the Premier League.
I think cruising is the right word.
I don't know what you can say about them. They're that good.
They're definitely one of the best Championship teams, not just that we've played, but in Championship history. I think there was that one point a few weeks ago that maybe they'll break the record. I don't know whether they're going to do that now.
They could do.
And then, of course, Coventry, another solid team as well, not quite as good as Burnley. So, Ant, what were your general thoughts on a draw and a defeat this week?
I think it's about what we expected. Coventry were in form heading into our game and hadn't lost many at home, so it was always going to be a tough place to go to, and we'd have all took a point. We got a point and it was a good performance and could have even nicked more in the end. But obviously, Burnley, again, you know, all you could have asked for is a good performance, and I think we got that. I think 3-1 in the end flatters them, and I think Burnley fans have been admitting that. We've been getting a lot of praise from them. I think they've had a bit of frustration this season because a lot of teams just tend to park the bus against them and don't really try and play any football, but they're rather... they praise the fact that we actually tried to play some football and go at them. So, obviously, they ended up winning 3-1. But I think that was more of a case of, you know, poor defending and individual errors that led to that rather than them blowing us away. So, and on another day, we could have nicked a couple of extra goals, you know, if it was poor finishing. So, frustrating in the sense that we probably could have got more from the league leaders. But, like we say, overall, a draw and a loss against these two teams, I think, is what we expected.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think when you have two games in a week, you can start to spot a few trends. And I wrote down in the notes that second half at Coventry, we were much better. The first half wasn't too great, similar to the West Brom game. We started quite slowly, then we had a lot of chances in the second half. And I think I've written that in my notes for the Burnley game as well. So I think maybe that's the reason why we haven't really done really well in these two games, is that we're not putting in a 90-minute performance. And I think, you know, in a way, somehow we played better against Burnley, but didn't get the 3 points. So I think second halves were much better. One thing that happened very early on in the first game, because we'll go chronologically, was Tete started. Of course, we're very happy to see him start after screwing against West Brom, and then another injury. So I don't know what there is more to say about City players getting injured this season, but can you find anything new to say about this issue?
No.
No, I didn't think so, to be honest.
It's getting a bit sad, I suppose, because Tete had such a good once he returned. He was clearly playing so well and straight away pretty much injured and back out pretty much the rest of the season now. I mean, we're back for probably the last couple of games at best.
Yeah, not really much point.
He was doing so well. It's just such a shame.
Yeah, and would you agree that, you know, he was playing well, and then just it's just the tail of the season, isn't it? Really, it's for him. We're not going to be getting into the playoffs, really.
Yeah, we've just had we haven't had a consistent 11 all season. We tend to get a player who hits form or looks good, and then we lose them to either injury or suspension, and you can just imagine how frustrated Rosinha is, because it's clear that Tete has great ability and would have been a great asset in the games that we had left, especially with his hold-up ability and giving us a bit of a plan B when we get pressed high, which I think at the moment is the only problem with Rosinha's tactical approach, is that when teams realise that they can sort of squeeze us to a mistake at the back, we don't have an outlet to counter that. So with Tete, we had it and then lost it so quickly. It's like, you know, we've seen glimpses of what he can do, and we're really, really optimistic about what he can bring to the team. And for whatever reason, he just can't stay fit. And, you know, hamstring suggests maybe that he's, you know, overstretched maybe on his run because he nearly got slid through, didn't he? That's when he pulled up. But yeah, really frustrating. Same with Coyle in the Burnley game. You know, these injuries have really disrupted the games as well. I thought Tete, obviously at Coventry, we had a game plan and that went straight out the window within the first half. And then with Coyle, again, we've got no fit right back, so we had to stick poor Doc there. So, you know, it's a very, very frustrating season, and you can just imagine Rosinha's pulling his hair out behind the scenes and probably trying to figure out why. And I can expect the players are going to have a long grueling pre-season, I think, in terms of running, because they'll need to build up some muscle and fitness, definitely, for the high press that he wants to do next year.
Yeah, I agree.
The Burnley game would have been interesting if it had been Tete up front instead of Pelkas, I think. Very interesting the way we were playing.
Yeah, I think Pelkas came under a bit of criticism. He was playing in that false nine role, and I'm not really sure that that's his best position. Although,
it was more being played there out of trying something new, wasn't it, really, Liam?
Yeah, I guess it's a free hit. Why not try something new against exactly. Burnley rather than anyone else in a game perhaps you really need to get 3 points? But then I guess one positive, that Tete came off, Oscar came on and scored perhaps his best goal for City. Exactly the sort of thing that I've been complaining about him, and a lot of people have, that, you know, when he gets into that position on the edge of the box, he usually doesn't score. He had a big chance against Burnley, which he didn't take, but the one against Coventry was really nice. Weak foot, top corner, taking it round the defender. So, and it's exactly the sort of impact we thought. Oh, I hoped that him being subbed against West Brom and not starting, and being dropped, and then perhaps going on to the next game, and when he gets his chance, you know, showing that he wants to get into the team and score. Of course, he doesn't actually have any rival players to get into the team now, because Tete and Connolly are both injured, and Pelkas hasn't played very well. But and is that Oscar's best goal so far, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was just inside the box. I think I thought it was outside from where I was sat, but I think it was just
he's still
not scored from outside the box.
It couldn't have been more top corner than that.
No, it was a great finish, especially with his weak foot. I mean, it's interesting that Tete did it with his weak foot the game before, and then Oscar went and did it with his weak foot against Coventry. But, you know, it's good for him to get that goal because, like we say, he seems to score in patches, and he'd gone a while without scoring. So for him to be dropped and then come back, you know, obviously take his chance after Tete's injury and get a goal straight back in the team will do him the world of good for confidence and the world of good for us for the rest of the season. Because if he goes on a run now where he scores, you know, there's not many games left, so he could finish on. I mean, he's probably got 20 goals in his sights. What's he, 7 goals off, 10 games left?
Yeah, I don't see him doing that, but...
It, won't he? 15 minimum, you
know.
It's
another hat-trick,
season, isn't it? You know, free signing from the Portuguese league, getting 15 goals in his first season would be good. I think that's what he should aim for. But, yeah, no, he took that goal well, and hopefully, like we say, he gets a couple more in the games left.
Yeah. I mean, I think a 15-goal season strike is what most teams cry out for. And even though we haven't really done enough to get into the top six this season, having him up front is exactly the sort of thing we wanted last year. And relegation-wise, we've not really ever been in a huge relegation battle, especially since Vecina came.
It just does, doesn't it, that if we're going to end the season with what you would assume, I would put money on him finishing on at least 15. But it shows that if you aren't anywhere near the top six and you've got a striker that scored 15 plus, it just shows that you haven't got enough goals anywhere else in the team. And I don't think it's really our fault this season because, like we say, the players that you'd look to score, your likes of Aliar, Tete, Pelkas, they've all been injured for large periods of the season that, you know, he's kind of had to shoulder the burden on his own, hasn't he? And Tufan, considering he's in and out of the team, to be on 5 goals is impressive as well from midfield. So, and he could have so many more if you put it anywhere but the middle of the goal at the keeper all the time. So, you know, we're a very nearly team, aren't we? You look at some of these players and you just think, you know, if we'd have had a fully fit squad this season, what could we have done? Or, you know, if we didn't have that horrific run under Schotter, it's just going to be a season where you look back on and just say, what if? And it's quite frustrating, isn't it? But optimistic for next season, at least.
Yeah, I think really we've been sort of hindered by the fact that we didn't have a good manager for half the season. Dawson came in and steadied the boat a little bit. But yeah, the football under Schotter was nowhere near as good as Rossini. I mean, how many goals do you think our team now would put past a Schotter team early in the season? It would be complete, you know, complete domination, wouldn't it? It would be men against boys, you know, to use a good idiom. It wouldn't be a pleasant thing to watch for us if we were the fans for the old version of City. But some of the football we played against Coventry in that period, we got the first goal, then Ebue had a big chance, Coyle had one over the bar, two fans scored a lovely header which was offside. So I think maybe looking at those chances, maybe we could have won it. I mean, you both said a draw was a fair result. I think it would have been really helpful to get another win. But one thing I'd like to just point out, because we've been saying the playoffs has been over for weeks and weeks, but on the commentary, James Fletcher, the commentator, was saying, you know, they really need to get that winning goal to get back into the playoff hunt. Give it a rest, mate. It's over. It's been gone for weeks and weeks. So, you know, I guess
Fletcher's doing his job. He's got to make it exciting.
Exactly.
But you see, the thing is that's the mindset Rossini will have. He's an ambitious coach.
It is the mindset Rossini has.
As long as it's mathematically possible, he will continue to say, why can't we get the top six? And all it takes, for example, like we're only saying really now that it's done because it's unlikely that we're going to go on and run a 3 or 4 wins. But if we do, you're back in it. So it's just we're going on the realistic nature that it's unlikely we will do so because of how inconsistent we've been and the lack of goals that we've got at the minute. But, you know, it's still there. It's like a little enticing carrot, but I think it's just going to be out of our reach, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we'd have to win something like 6 or 7 of the last 9 to even get close to the playoffs.
Well, considering we're playing the teams above us, you probably wouldn't need to because you'd be gaining ground with each win you had. If you won 3 or 4 on the bounce, you're right back in it, aren't you, for the running?
Of course, it makes it more difficult to get those wins because they are higher than you. But yeah, I mean, it's the right attitude to have, and it's exactly the attitude you want the players to have. It annoyed me ever so slightly. But you usually just do a very good job. We haven't won in away from home in like 4 or 5 games. So it's just frustrating. I think someone said it on the last episode. We never seem to get, that home and away form at the same time. But hopefully that's something the senior can work on going into next season. Every way that big chance he put across, I mean, I don't want to say to him too much because he had a fantastic game against Burnley, but
perhaps I was going to say, can we go on against Burnley instead?
Yeah, well, let's do that. Let's do that because I think that was a solid point away from home. Shame to concede and not keep another clean sheet, but a draw, very solid. But then Burnley, as you said, a free hit. So, do you want to just wax lyrical about Ebi Way? Because I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was really important for him to put that kind of performance in because, since coming, he's not really obviously shown what kind of player that he can be. I mean, Liam Rosenia said that he was his, top target for January. So he must have something about him. And, he's come into some really tricky away games where we've been under the cosh and not playing well. So he's not really had the platform to really express himself. And I thought he's gone into this Burnley game. He obviously looks a bit more match sharp. He looks more fit. And he's just gone, no, do you know what? I'm going to go for it. And I thought all game he had Mattson on toast. I think Mattson was really worried about whatever threat Ebi Way carried whenever he ran at him. Like we say, if we had, I think there was sometimes the players were stuck in two minds whether or not to run up and support him and get into the box and commit men forward, but risk being countered. And there were some times where he had the ball in a really good position and he put the ball in the box and there was nobody there. So it had been quite frustrated. He was desperate for a goal. Towards the end, he kept shooting from like the outside of the box and he trying to curl one into the top corner. And you can see now his confidence is growing. I'd like to see him start in the next game because I think he will. Yeah, and I'm hoping that he has a similar, because if he does similar against Reading, he'll probably score. And it's interesting because I think we'll probably go for him on loan again next season. He's unlikely to play for Palace. Maybe if they go down, he'll play. But I think we'll go for him again next season. And it'd be good for him to get a good run of games now to show us what he can do to get us excited to have him next season with a full pre-season with Rossi in the squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Will, that's exactly the sort of performance we expected from a player that was the top transfer target for Rosenia, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Rosenia was on about him in November, not even in January. He was on about him back during the World Cup break. So he showed how much he was after him. And obviously, it took him a bit of time to get involved, but I think that's because of fitness. But like I say, he looks on it now. And it's not just him either. Adama Traore finally starting a game, and he was superb in that midfield.
Yeah. I mean, for the first start he's had in men's football in well over a year, I think something like 13, maybe even 14 months, he looked really sharp and he was going round players quite easily, won quite a few fouls, Jack Grealish-esque. So, having all those players like Ebi Way and Traore that can go past players with their pace and their skill was really exciting. And just thinking, I thought Aliar played really well. He had a really great cross to Pelkas. I mean, a sort of cross Oscar or Tete would love. And it just, we didn't have that player, that, aerial presence to score the goal. But just thinking about it, I'm surprised we lost the game now because all our players seem to do really well, especially going forward. But we did win the game on expected goals. Of course, that means pretty much nothing. But and it was the... of course, that doesn't really matter if you're going to make those defensive mistakes. So one big question was, Elder, the first goal, was he fouled?
No. For me, if you're an opposition fan and that's given against you, you're all right. You're irate. He's not put enough on him. He's misjudged the header. And if it only required that small touch to make him miss out, then he mistimed it. He just got to own it, really, and he shouldn't have stood there appealing. He should have got straight back up and tried to track back as well. That little bit of time gave Teller what he needed to be able to cut inside and obviously go around Macca and slot in. But arguments, Dalo probably should be doing better his near post. But I think he was a bit close. It's hard to save something that low, isn't it? It's not a foul for me. I also think the marking between Macca and Elder was poor for the second, and then obviously Greaves with the obscene pass for.
What was he doing?
Great assist for Teller and the third goal, but maybe they just wanted him to have an hat trick and just say, yeah, mate. But it's frustrating because, like you say, when you're against a side like that and you play so well, and the three goals were preventable, I think is the main point of that. You're coming away from it disappointed that we had a lot of clear cut chances that we didn't take the best of, and then we've gifted them three and they've got 3 points, and very frustrating because you know, we could have really made a statement there with a win. But, you know, you take positives out of it. We didn't really expect to win anyway. And they've come away from that thinking, well, we've had a game. So, you know, can't complain too much, I suppose. But the errors do need to be cut out next season because it's been a problem all year, hasn't it?
Are we the only team that scored against Burnley both games?
No, but Tufan is the only player to score against him in both games. I spent far too long trying to work that out using various, you know, statistics websites. But no, I think a few teams have scored against them twice. But most of the teams that have scored against them are yet to play them again. So it isn't really that impressive a statistic. But yeah, we've scored two goals against Burnley, and not everyone can say that. So, you know, silver lining. And thought it was a really good finish from Tufan. Of course, it didn't matter. And he did try to put it straight at the keeper, as he tends to do. I know you said that earlier, Ant. But it's good to see him get another goal. So,
I mean,
you know,
I think he was trying to decapitate Mihoric.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Fletcher always goes on about striking the ball with vengeance, and I'm sure he would have said it, you know, after that goal, because he does love that phrase. And
yeah, I disagree. I think it was an important goal because I think
it was the performance deserved it.
Confidence wise, you know, it'd be demoralising for him to sit there on the back of a 3-0 defeat when playing so well, and I think getting that goal at the end. You know, Rosini will have said to them, look, you played really well today. You know, the mistakes were silly. We need to cut them out. But well done for keep on going to the end. You know, 93 minutes, you carried on against the best side in the league and one of the best sides this league will see. Taking confidence into Reading, you know, I think it's quite an important goal.
Yeah, next goal wins, maybe. Maybe we deserve
golden
to win
goal,
it.
We win 1-0.
Golden goal, yeah. So, I mean, I thought Traore, Ebiwe, Aliar were all pretty good. Tufan got an important goal. I thought Longman actually did very well when he came on. For, you know, I mean, he always does, but he did particularly well. Some good crosses and had a lot of shots. So, and he did help, you know, that goal. He did pass it to her. Well, he got the pre-assist to Doherty. So it was nice to see that. You know, of course, it's not a real thing. It's just describing what happened.
It's great.
Fuck XG. It's not a real thing.
Well, XG is a real thing. But
that'll be the next Octostat to come out.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't take those chances.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Yeah. So shall we move on to Reading? Because I think after that performance against Burnley, I think we've got a very decent chance of going to Reading, who are just one place below us. We're 15th, which I think is a little disappointing that we're 15th. I feel like we deserve to be a tiny bit higher than that. But they're 16th. They've lost the last four games, so... Ant, how do you expect this one to go at the, I mean, I don't know what the stadium is. I'm going to call it the Medeski.
It's the Select Car Leasing Stadium, no?
Oh, that doesn't sound like a fun day out.
A lot less posh than Medeski.
On paper, it's a game that we'd be earmarking for a win. But we are Hull City and they're not doing very well. So, you know, chances are that we won't play very well and we'll lose. But it's... I think this is an important game more for, you know, the players that are wanting to be part of this next season. I think these remaining few games now are going to have to be statements for places in this side.
Yeah.
So I think there's a few positions definitely that are up for grabs. And these are the kind of games now where you're going to want to be looking for players to really step up and take control and say, look, we're better than you. And we're going to show that. It's a tough one because you don't really want to be playing the sides that are struggling. I mean, they've got a points deduction hanging over their head at the minute, and if they get the points deduction, they're only 3 points off the bottom three.
In big trouble.
So desperation, I think, starting to sneak in a little bit. You know, that they're on a bad run. Fans really aren't happy with the manager and some decisions that he's making and things like that. So it's a kind of one of those bad situations we've got to try and take advantage of. Get the, you know, if you start well and get their fans against them from the off, you know, we could probably have a good night. But you know, it's typical City, isn't it? We might concede an awful set piece and then be chasing the game for 80 minutes. And you know, but we have to go there and play on the front foot. We just have to, especially after how well we played against Burnley. It'd just be criminal for us to go there and get turned over, wouldn't it?
I mean, yeah. Reading owes for that home game. Well, the referee is still owes anyway for that home game.
Well, that was not a good day.
The Elm Park Royals podcast channel earlier doing a preview for their channel, and they really don't like us because I didn't actually realise. It's funny how you don't realise these things, but we are a bogey team for them. So despite them beating us this season, I think they've only beaten us twice in the last.
That was a rare win.
Yeah, twice in the last 15 games or something like that. So they're really not looking forward to this game. You know, kind of like us with some of our bogey teams where we just expect to lose. That's the kind of mindset they're in. So again, another thing we've got to try and take advantage of and hopefully come away with a nice win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we've drawn 1-1 the last two times we've gone there. And Wilkes got the goal. Remember Wilkes? Yeah. I mean, he's still the player that you see on Twitter. If you go onto a Hull City game, it always shows
Yeah. Manic Wilkes. Yeah,
2 years ago, it's ridiculous, but no Manic Wilkes. So, I mean, hopefully we're going to score.
Just got from 50 yards against the keeper who just lets it through his hands.
Well, that exactly. It was a good result last season and a good goal. Not really, but Wilkes will say it was. So,
Alex,
I mean,
in the chat, you need to do a Wilkes klaxon. Well, we've not had one in a while.
Yeah. But they're seventh in the home table. I know, you know, maybe home form, away form, maybe you don't want to read too much into that. But they have lost their last two home games 1-0. So I think they're definitely there for the taking. But then again, as you said, they're below us, they're in rubbish form. We are the team, always gives another team a win when they need it. And Tom Ince, of course, a former player, surely he's bound to score. He's their top goal scorer. So I think... even though it's not on Sky, or maybe a midweek game, at the fact Reading have a rubbish record against us, perhaps, you know, the superstitious statistics aren't really looking in our favour. But I hope we get the win. But I guess who should we play for this game? I think there's, you know, Ebua, he's definitely going to play, but there are a few players I think that could be trying to start. So, I mean, I guess Darwin goal, and then who would we play at right back? Because it looks like Louis Coyle is going to be injured.
We don't know exactly yet, but
not confirmed how long he's out for, have they?
It might be. It might even be all right for the weekend. We don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be a big boost because I think he's been fairly decent the last few games.
See, I think he'd be tempted to put either Elder in right back and play him, you know, as like an inverted wing back on the other side,
Greaves
in left back, or play Alfie Jones in right back and put Greaves in the middle. I don't know. I mean,
he's the first one of those two.
Yeah, he's more likely to put Greaves in full back as we've seen throughout the season. I think, you know, Elders, as much as we probably don't want him to play on the right hand side because he's been okay in left back lately, I just think that natural fullback would be the logical way to go, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for a whole game because, of course, Coyle lasted into the second half, didn't he? But then I thought Doherty maybe was at fault. He was out of position too high up the pitch for the second goal. So, you know, I think he did do well with the assist later. So maybe there's a reason to put Doherty in the midfield and actually have Elder at right back because, as we'll get onto with the combined lineup before the show started, Will and I were both discussing that Regan Slater isn't in the best form. So perhaps you drop him out and maybe have Coyle, Doherty midfield and Elder at right back. Would you agree with that, Will?
I would probably think about having. I think the midfield needs to be I think Tufan's made a shout for coming back into the midfield, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, he scored, yeah. We did just spend 5 minutes talking about how good it was that he got a goal, so I guess he would deserve to start and, you know, capitalise on that confidence that I've got from the important goal.
I think
goal.
Midfield will be the most interesting position, other than obviously the right-back problem. I think midfield's the most interesting one to look out for because, like we say, Doc got the assist, but technically from right-back. Then you've got Adama Traore, who... You know, played really well, but is his
cannot drop him
that two in a row. Tufan, who didn't start but he came on and scored, played really well. Then you've got Siri, who we know what Siri can do. You've got Simons. You know, what does he go for? Because I don't think on paper, form wise, you'd probably have Siri, Traore, and Tufan as a midfield three, but I think that's too lightweight. So yeah, logically, you're thinking it's either going to be Adama or Tufan, and yeah, I don't know which way he'll go. Interesting. Yeah. Good dilemmas to have, though. Dilemmas
different options. Well, yeah, because they've had so many injuries, it's rare that we actually have four or five players trying to get into, you know, that same position. I think maybe I would drop Slater because he has been playing on the wing or in a more attacking position, and I don't think that's his best position. So I think it would be a bit unfair to say he's had a poor run of form because, you know, he is out of position. But I think, you know, with those other players in better form, perhaps, I drop him. But shall we just get on to it? No more variegating. Here's the combined lineup for Hull City and Reading. So we've got Oscar Estepinian up front. Of course, he scored against Coventry and either it would be Zhao or Carroll or Long. For Reading, and they were rubbish. Got Ebiwe on the left wing, although maybe he should be on the right. I don't really think that matters. Tom Ince is on the right wing because, of course, he's the top scorer for Reading. Tufan, Jeff Hendrick in midfield with Seri, Elder left back, Maka, Jones, and then I'm not even sure how to pronounce this Reading right back's name. Mbenge, I suppose. But he is one of the only fit right backs between the two clubs, and then Carl Darlow in goal. So
by default, he's in the team.
Exactly, by default. So I saw you giggling through that. Is that one of the worst ones yet?
Actually, it's one of your better ones.
Thank you. It doesn't really mean a lot because they are all terrible, to be fair. But. You know, I think that one's okay, and it's nice to have eight Hull City players in that lineup. Sometimes recently, like when I didn't bother with one for Burnley because it'd just be 11 Burnley players.
Wait, pull that back up.
Put it back up. Ooh, it's so good. You want to see it again?
Why is Ebiwe not in? Ebiwe, you put him on the left wing. Why have you put Ebiwe on the left wing?
Well, I don't think wing position counts. I just forgot which wing he was on, basically. It doesn't. Don't read into right wing, left wing, left back, and right back. That's fine, but you know, I don't know. The thing is, he could play either wing because he put good crosses in and also had a few shots, so he could probably do either. But
This is where we find out Jeff Hendrick suspended.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope he isn't, because then I look like a right prat. I'd have to say to him.
Yeah, because combined 11s are usually your saving graces every episode.
Yes, of course. But then one Hull City midfielder who has been playing quite well, who we've not really even mentioned for the whole podcast, is Xavier Simons, who today, just a few hours ago, was announced that he has signed on a permanent deal.
Well,
so a signing in March, he'll be like a new signing. Well, I think that's astute business, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, there's not really much more to say than that. We've finally seen him actually play a few games, so we know who we're getting.
It made sense. Him and Rossini have said in press conferences, well, Rossini said he wants to keep him, and he himself has said he wants to stay here. So I think it was an inevitable move.
Yeah, you want players that want to be here. He's young. And it's obviously what I like about the transfer policy at the minute is we are looking at young players that have got bright futures. So you've either got young players that are going to develop into, you know, really, really good first team players and bring us success, or you're going to have really good young players that eventually become a very sellable asset in the sense that they're going to recruit, you know, recoup us a lot of money. So that kind of transfer policy is always going to be a win. I think what from what we've seen of him, despite, you know, for the majority of the season, wondering why we even had him on loan, and then he's come in and proven what he can do. I think it's an exciting signing to have, especially, you know, as Siri, you know, as he gets into more into his 30s with us, might become more injury prone. You've got an able-bodied replacement ready in Simons. And like we say, he wanted to be here. So anybody that wants to be part of the, you know, the rebuild that we're doing here, then let's do it. I mean, was the fee undisclosed or was it actually?
I don't suppose it'll be that much.
I know that it was worth noting that in the announcement for the transfer, there was a few bits from journos that were saying that it was intended to be done on deadline day, but it was actually Chelsea's deal.
It was meant to. Yeah, the paperwork didn't get through on time on Chelsea's
end. All the staff were working out on getting the Fernandes deal through instead, which is understandable. It was £100 million.
That's their priority, isn't it, for Chelsea, not getting, you know, Simons to us.
But poor Simons sat somewhere in Anlaby just thinking, I want to be here. Screw Enzo.
Well, he's now.
I mean, he was here anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand why they've announced it now, though, because if it had to be on deadline day...
They've agreed the deal. It's been confirmed they've agreed the deal. It just means it won't go through until the end of the season. It just means he isn't going to go back to Chelsea. He's going to stay here.
Well, I guess he has to go and, you know, pack his bags, you know, get some stuff from
home. He can do that next week on the international break.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's the international break after Reading, so I guess regardless of the result, maybe that you know, momentum won't carry over, or if we you know, we lose, it doesn't really matter. But do we think we're going to get some momentum from this Reading game? Or what are our official match predictions?
I'll go for the 3-0 like I always do.
Yeah. Well, I think this game could potentially end 3-0 and not to Reading, because I think with the if we play as well as we did in the second half on the ball, creating the chances against Reading, who are in poor form, I think especially if we get an early goal, we could see City finally score a few goals. So I might go tighter than that, because I'm not really confident in some of our players finishing. So I might go a 1-0 City win. But what about you, Ant?
1-1. That's what I said on the
1-1.
Odd. I think it'd be one of those days where we're really frustrated. I think Reading will make it difficult for us. I think it'll be similar to what it was like at Stoke, where we go there and it's made really physical, and it's the kind of game that we don't want to be playing, and probably concede an awful set piece and then be chasing the game and equalise later on, kind of thing. I'm expecting an Aliar goal though. I think he's on it this game. I think this is it.
I think that's one thing we haven't mentioned actually about the Burnley game is, I think the reason we looked so good as well is because we were playing a team that, when just being defensive, we were playing a team who were trying to also play a positive style of football, which allowed us to have the space to do it ourselves. And Reading are going to do that.
No, it's going to be like the away game where we had the ball for the entire time, and hopefully our set piece defending, well, it has improved significantly, because of course we conceded two there. So I don't think we're going to have the same problems. I think they've got worse and we've got better since that game, which I wasn't happy with. You know, the own goal at the end there. Can't remember who that was credited to. To be fair.
I think if we score first, I think we could get 2 or 3.
There's been a few games like that, I think, this season where if we'd scored when we were on top, we might have gone on and we've just not been able to.
I think a goal before the 20-minute mark and we run away with it. But, you know, I think the longer the game goes on and it gets to a position where their fans are getting frustrated, the more it suits us. So we've kind of got quite a bit going in our favour, because we either score early and then the game, you know, becomes a bit more of what we want and they've got to come at us and it's a bit more open, or they get frustrated and you know, like we're saying, forces errors and, you know, creates a bit of an atmosphere that their players don't want to play in. The only other alternative, obviously, is that Reading score early first and then it creates a bit of a problem. But I've got belief in us at the minute, you know, completely different to what we was under Shotter, that when the other team scores first, I'm like, that's okay, because I still feel like we're going to go and score. Whereas, like, you know, under Schotter, as soon as we conceded the first goal, it was like, oh, let's get them
death over. Sentence, wasn't it? 1-0 in the first half, or really any point, because we really didn't.
Because even at 2-0 against Burnley, I was sat there and I was like, if we get the next goal, like, you know, we can really go at them. It wasn't until, obviously, the third goal went in, we decided to just boot it into our own net, essentially. It really was hammered home that we were going to lose. But like I say, it's good to have that sort of mindset in games now, where we're actually, you know, still feel like we're in games all the time, instead of within 20 minutes just thinking, what's the point?
Game over, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's a lovely mindset that we've got. And I really enjoyed watching the clips from Rossini's evening with the fans. That was posted on YouTube, and he comes across so well. It's just nice to be... Yeah, it's just really lovely to have a really good manager who comes across really well in interviews, and, you know, has a very exciting attacking team. We've got lots of young players, and, even though we did lose 3-1 at home, of course, because it was Burnley, and I think we have a lot of things to be happy for as Hull fans at the moment, and lots of optimism going into a game perhaps we should win. And then another season with the senior full season, hopefully we can have a really good push next season.
People still managed to find... There were still people still managing to question Rossini on his tactics on that evening, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who'd be a manager? Because you get criticism all the time. It just seems such a difficult job.
I think what really made me realise that it's a normal thing is that when I went on the Burnley Channel Turfcast, he was telling me that there's even some of their fans that don't like the fact they play out from the back. And they're
nearly 20 points clear in 3 games from promotion.
Well, they're just used to...
clear at the top of the league, eyeing up the championship points record. And they still have fans that complain that they play out from the back. So it's always
Chris Wood.
So just own it and just let the players on the pitch do the talking, I suppose. And just, like, Rossini is not going to budge. It's the way he wants to play. And I think next season you'll see even more. Because I think this season, I think fitness levels from the players haven't been up to the standard he wants. He wants
all pre-season under his belt.
Yeah. I think the pre-season's so important, and player recruitment will be so important. And it's like, you know, we need high-energy players, players that are going to throw themselves on the line for 93 minutes. He wants to do with us what Kompany's doing with Burnley. He wants a team that press as a full 11, force issues for the entire game, and just basically choke out the other team with majority of possession. So it's really exciting what we could potentially do next season, although we are setting ourselves up for spectacular failure. It is nice to have that. We could be a phenomenal, you know,
there's clearly some building.
Yeah.
There's a clear vision to the team and the club as well.
We have an identity, finally.
Mm. Yeah, and then another development was... I don't think we're allowed to talk about it, so I'm not going to mention it.
What?
Nothing. What? Nothing at all. Nothing
at
all.
Is it going to be the rumour that we're signing with Kappa?
Oh, yes, that rumour. So, am I allowed to talk about that? Because, of course... Ajun is the owner of Kappa, isn't he? So, of course, that's for people who don't know what that is, it's the Umbro will be got rid of as the new shirt owner. And I think that's a bit of a shame.
Which is
because
interesting Umbro because it's not the end of Umbro's contract.
So they're intentionally, you know, getting rid of them. But, you know, it's another link to...
Obviously, it's just a rumour at the moment, Nathaniel. There's nothing official.
I think a few of us are going to have to go to the gym if we're getting Kappa, because...
the thing I'm not happy about.
Football.
Yeah. They're not the most flattering of shit. Even the footballers look a bit too... You know, and these guys are ripped. The only quarrel I have with Kappa, I just don't like how they're... logo is like put on millions of times. I don't like that down the side of a kit, but other than that, they've done some nice ones. The retro ones they did were really nice.
I mean, I'm not sure about that, because when Umbro have those diamonds that go all the way down, that looks ace.
I didn't like them. I don't like
there's something wrong with you.
I don't like them being too like the manufactured. I like them more plain and succinct. So I like them when it's just there, and then the rest of the kit is the club's identity, not the manufacturer all over the kit kind of thing. It reminds me of those, like, obscure teams you find on FIFA from like the J League that are just absolutely plastered in loads of different sponsors and advertisements. I don't like
it. Oh, they're wearing like Mizuno kits.
Yeah.
Or any rugby
shirt. I liked it when Paddy Power did it with Huddersfield without the shirt sponsor. I like them not, you know, quiet, a nice quiet kit. Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think smart is a nice word to end on for today's episode. Thank you very much for everyone for listening and commenting and liking and all that lovely stuff. And still looking forward to the launch of our website. That's going to be happening very soon. We're going to have lots of exciting articles written by a whole host of people who may or may not even support Hull. It's that exciting that we've got people from all over. And I think we've got one Wigan fan who, you know, wants to sign for the prestigious, you know, website of To Hull and Back. So thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you again. In the moment, that's why.
Well, yeah, and you can't blame him.
No, they're okay.
I think
now
they are.
Anyway. Bottom of the league. Sean Maloney in.
Yeah, I mean, that. Well, we're not going to, you know, we're not a Wigan podcast. We're not going to, you know, talk about that too much. But I don't think that was the best managerial appointment, followed by another fairly, you know, dodgy managerial appointment. So we'll see you all again next week, hopefully after a fantastic 3-0 win against Reading. So, ta-ra.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.